Why do you assume that people who hear this won't care? Or,
well, because most people who hear it don't care. I mean, that's the nature of truth, I would say. I believe that the truth has been proclaimed from the hilltops from the beginning of time, and the majority of people choose to ignore it.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the third eye.
The podcast about
the unknown.
My name is David Blackshear Key. I am from Point Clear, Alabama, and I long suffered from a condition called photophobia. So before this, no one would have ever seen me, even in a lighting situation such as this, without sunglasses on, like bars, whatever. Only when it was super dark and stuff did I ever take off my Ray-Bans. I had to get used to people talking shit in various areas and, you know, people calling me out and thinking that I was just trying to be cool.
Tell me about the first time that you went to the bar with your sunglasses on.
Actually, the first time does come to mind. It was shortly after I was released from the hospital. I was on a roof in Brooklyn, New York, and there was a party going on, like a house party. I was wearing sunglasses and was feeling slightly self-conscious about it. Anyway, this guy kind of comes up. He's like, "Hey, man, let me," he like puts his arm around me. That was a common thing too, like, you know, they're grinning and stuff, like, "Do you not just feel like kind of a loser right now? What's up with the sunglasses?" And I was like, "I do kind of feel like a loser, but you're about to feel like a dick because I have brain cancer." Photophobia is sensitivity to light. It's a strange term because you're not really actually scared of light. I don't know why they call it that. You're just extremely sensitive to light. It's basically if somebody were to shine a Q-beam into your eyes, the sensation you would experience is a sensation that somebody with photophobia experiences from much dimmer light, indoor, outdoor, you name it, and it's painful.
So how did you feel, like, going out of the house looking like that?
It was kind of nice in the sense that before that I was a freak but didn't really have a freak flag. Just because of my spiritual and political / philosophical belief systems that where I was deeply entrenched in separated me from those around me. And that had, you know, been going on and developing and having different vases since I was a child. So never feeling and becoming comfortable with the fact that I was not really part of the larger, you know, didn't get to play in the reindeer games, so to speak.
What does that mean?
Dang it.
What's reindeer games? I've never heard that phrase.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. You know,
the reindeer games, that sort of thing.
Oh.
Didn't get to play in all the reindeer games because he had a red nose, you know?
So you were like...
I was like Rudolph because I had a red nose. But instead of having a red nose, I had an eye patch and sunglasses.
David is my friend, and it's true that when you first meet him, he may strike you as odd. It doesn't take long to understand that he has somewhat polarizing worldviews. He's a little bit of a conspiracy theorist.
The Philadelphia Project, it was actually an experiment in time travel.
He's a devout Christian.
I am ultimately responsible for the fall of man all the way back.
And used to dabble in witchcraft.
I'm familiar with Satan.
In general, David's the kind of guy who questions everything, who will look for signs and meaning behind even the most ordinary experiences. This reflects really what I like most about David. He has an insatiable appetite for knowledge.
I was seeking the truth in a sense,
because Satan is truly, he exists. And I sought him out, and I did it fervently. And I did the same thing with God, though. Then I heard the gospel message in its full form, and God spoke to me through it and just totally radically opened up my heart and all, and I was able to feel the presence of the Holy Spirit and was transformed and was never the same after that.
I was living in Brooklyn, working at a North Face store. Probably 4 or 5 days, I was just kind of, I'm bad about ignoring problems, and I was like, man, my vision, what's going on here? I'd be laying down and trying to see something and having to close one eye, like, am I seeing double? This is weird. Within a period of a week of that happening, it got extreme. I started wearing an eye patch to work and sunglasses on top of the eye patch shortly thereafter. I was sent to get a brain scan and a PT scan, CAT scan, and they came back with the results. They were like, Mr. Key, would you like to have a seat? And I was like, no, I have a brain tumor, don't I?
So you made your escape, you mean that night?
That night, yeah. They tried to spinal tap me, and that was where I drew the line. I had to feed a dog and stuff, and I'd been in the hospital for like 5 hours, so I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and reevaluate things. I have a brain tumor at this point. Even though they didn't say that, they just said, you have something in your brain. We're not sure what it is. You either have multiple sclerosis, or you had a stroke, or you have a brain tumor. The photophobia became increasingly worse, the sensitivity to light, so I was wearing sunglasses full-time, as well as an eye patch. It was awkward. And so I was having a hard time getting around. I'd called my parents, then I called work the next day. I was like, listen, I'm not going to be coming in. I've got some sort of serious medical issue. And so I flew home. Then I went to get a second opinion at MD Anderson in Houston. And fortunately, there was this guy there who happened to be one of my doctors who was from Japan. And this rare type of tumor that I had is more common in Japan, probably because we dropped the frickin' A-bomb on them and mutated their genomes to some degree. Though it's very rare, they have like more of them over there, and so they have it in their medical journals. And he was like, it might be germinoma. And he was like, so he got like super on board with like, no, you need to have a biopsy. And there's only a handful of doctors in the world that can really go into this part of the brain that's like in the dead center in the pineal and get a piece of it. The pineal is an interesting thing. They don't know a lot about it at all in Western medicine. It's the third eye. It's like the thing that people say is the how you tap into the universal subconscious, and all the like all Eastern and mythical mystical medicine is like the third eye, because it releases DMT and all this stuff. And in ancient Egypt, it was considered the seat of the soul, and it's seated in the dead center of the brain. It could also affect your nature, your attitude, all these things. They like tell you all these different things that it can affect, but they don't really tell you anything. So, yeah. They don't know anything about it. It's a part of the brain that they really know very little about. And it's a part of the brain that is now just kind of a gaping cavity of nasty in the middle of my brain. The first doctor I went to at MD Anderson that was going to do the biopsy was going to do it while I was awake and all creepy, like Silence of the Lambs style. And so I went for a second opinion. I was like, I'm not really down for that, being operated on while I'm telling you whether it hurts or not and stuff. The second doctor was like, no, that guy's an amateur. And so anyway, he dug on in there. They went in there and got a little nibble of that tumor and pulled it out and ran tests on it and stuff, and sure enough, it was a germinoma. And so I was, they were like, hey, kid, guess what? You can, like, be treated fairly successfully, and there's a good chance that this thing won't come back and kill you. Congratulations, you made this very small percentile of people that, you know, this thing's actually kind of rare. And I was like, sweet, score, kind of. Because I was also like, wow, that dude just dug in my brain. I feel really weird now. The weirdest thing was after that operation. That's when things got really weird. And when I really lost my mojo, my machismo, and began that kind of path, it was like, wow, dude, you have no cojones anymore.
The surgery left him pretty devastated.
Crazy anxiety and discomfort with my surroundings, and also my own physical nature, and it's weird. Like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, as the saying goes. Just like, I became extremely skittish. I could not hardly cross a street. I couldn't ride in the front seat of a car. And I had agoraphobia, and had to learn how to ride a bike because I couldn't drive anymore, and I couldn't do a lot of things for a long time that I was capable of doing. And before that, I grew up wanting to be a stuntman and felt extraordinary lack of fear in doing physical things, doing stunts and climbing trees and stuff, broke all kinds of bones and was generally like a crazy wild man. And after that, I could barely leave my apartment.
Over time, David learned to cope with his neurological problems. By the summer of 2012, he was working as a youth counselor in Oregon. This is when he first learned about Bethel's School of Supernatural Ministries, a church that practices Christian healing.
A fellow roams through town who is a friend of my working associate slash homie. Yeah, he's going to go study supernatural healing. So I was like, wait, you're going to the school, Bethel, of supernatural ministry? Tell me about that. Are y'all kind of like how it is in the Bible and stuff, you know, with the healing and of the sick and the lame? And he's describing this stuff to me, and I'm like, yeah, this sounds pretty legit. I'm going to go check this out. Drive down to Bethel the following weekend, and long story short, hands are laid on me, and I'm cured of photophobia.
Well, don't make the long story short. That's the whole story. Don't just gloss over the entire
story. I didn't understand at first why David was so reluctant to tell me about the healing, but after we spoke for a while, I realized it was a sensitive subject.
They laid hands on me and prayed and stuff. I was healed.
How did it begin and end?
I'll tell you whatever you want to know about it. I mean, I do feel a little weird talking about it, to be honest. Because it's almost like trite to talk about it. To talk about something that's so profound as a spiritual healing and have it podcasted to people who don't give a damn. I almost feel, to now that we're getting real, like a degree like I'm being disingenuous with like the nature of healing or something. I don't really know. Recounting it and talking about it, yeah, there's something about, like, this is just not going to be understood or appreciated in its proper form. Like, yeah, it's kind of sacred. It's something that's holy. And oftentimes talking about these things just doesn't serve any greater good. I mean, I'll talk about it, but that's just kind of like that's what I have to say about it.
When David finally shared the story with me, he became uncharacteristically soft-spoken and used a vernacular that reminded me of the things I'd heard in church as a kid.
The crucial thing that one must realize in understanding something like this is that you actually have the Trinitarian God, the Father, and the Holy Spirit, that those things are very real forces of good that exist.
And so there's a lot of these people that are surrounding the place with prayer, people that are real disciples of Christ and have been given the gift of the Holy Spirit. This is a very eclectic kind of group of healing people that have different gifts and stuff and that are calling God's blessing and his forgiveness and his healing powers upon the people that come there. Whatever practices of Western medicine have failed them, and you show up and you go into a room, and like the first room, they're kind of explaining to you, like, okay, there's people that have invested a lot of prayer into you. Some of you will start feeling that whatever you've come here to be healed for, changing now. At that point, I felt a warm, very strange tingling sensation going on in the back of my neck and stuff. And it took me real aback. I was looking around, like, to see if anybody else was, like, having this or anything. And they were like, please speak up, you know, if you're experiencing any healing and stuff. But I didn't speak up because I was just sort of taken aback. It was the power of the Holy Spirit coming down upon me and healing me. Then we were led into this next room where like people are kind of on a stage doing some music and stuff, and other people were like wandering around, like blowing trumpets and things. You just kind of find your place and lay down and pray and stuff. And I remember seeing like people crying, like couples and stuff, and wondering what they were being healed from, and people that were like extremely emotional and, you know, had just been healed from something or another. And I went from that room into another room where some people started laying hands on me and praying over me and stuff. And at that point, I'd already felt like a great deal of healing had begun. And one of the women who was praying for me said that it would take a little bit of a time, but that my photophobia would be cured and healed and stuff. And so immediately when I walked out of the whole Bethel church scene, I was already like, well, have I been totally healed now? I feel like I can see a lot better and stuff, like taking off my sunglasses and things, but then realized that it wasn't totally better. But then within a couple of weeks, yeah, my photophobia was totally gone. And yeah.
So there you have it.
Would you ever like consider the idea that something else was going on when the photophobia went away?
Such as what?
I'm just curious. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't really affect my faith one way or another.
Why wouldn't it?
The healing process, I didn't really need to confirm my faith. It's already, you know, completely founded and rock solid before going into something like that. It's not going to change.
So going into that experience, you did you believe that you were going to be healed?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have any doubt?
I had doubt. Yeah.
Where do you think that doubt came from?
Logic. It's just a matter of, I don't think it's like doubt is a bad thing. You know, I don't think that faith should be blind. When people say, you know, you just got to have faith. Like, I think that you should have founded faith. That's, I mean, one of the things that makes my faith so strong is the fact that I've been able to verify it through so much reason and logic and testing and history and archaeology and all these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Basically every area of science and things that I look to have backed up my faith and have made it stronger.
Is that just how you cope with it, or do you really...
That's just how I view it, like, is all kind of a
big Shakespearean absurd play, which we're all part of. Yeah. I mean, how the hell else am I supposed to look at it? But I have nothing to complain about at all, I wouldn't say, no.
Really?
Really. Like, look at me, I'm sitting on a couch, like, half drunk on wine, ate a good meal today. If I look around me, there's people all over the place that are very much less fortunate than I am. I am given the things which I desire most, which are truth and, what's there to bitch about? I've kind of got a Benjamin Button thing going on where I'm getting older, but I'm also recovering, regaining strength all the time.
What do you think's waiting for you?
On the other side?
A great deal of peace and joy and eternity. All the things of this world will fall away, and you know, there's a lot. I hope I get to ask some questions and stuff, and I'm not sure if it's just gonna be like a straight, like, hardcore culture shock into heaven, or if I'm gonna get to be like, wait, I want to revisit some of the stuff on Earth that I still had questions about.
Like, if you'll get a chance to figure out what the fuck was going on for all the time.
Or whether I'm just going to be, like, straight jumped I'd like to, like, kind of linger a little bit. Like,
David, stop being the new guy. We're trying to move on. We're in heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Just let it go. I don't think I have any more questions. Do you have anything else you want to say? This is it.
No, that's it.
Sure.
Good luck to all you peeps out there. Remember the thing about he who seeks truth shall find it.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
David is living in Alabama now. His photophobia has been cured. If you're interested in the school that David talks about in this piece, Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry is online at ibethel.org. That's ibethel.org. This show was produced by the talented writer and radio producer Bridget Burnquist. If you liked this show or hated it or have more questions about faith healing, leave your thoughts in the comments on SoundCloud or write us a review on iTunes. But most of all, visit HBM on Facebook, where this conversation never ends. That's facebook.com/HereBeMonstersRadio. The music you heard on this show was from Lucky Dragons, Swamp Dog, Flower Petal Downpour, and The Black Spot. And in case you're wondering, Here Be Monsters is a part of the Mule Radio Syndicate, which distributes other great shows like Everything Sounds, The Shakes, and Decode DC. They even built a fancy new page on their site just for the show, along with a bio and some neat links. So if you feel so inclined, to check that out. That's muleradio.net/monsters. Stay in touch and stay tuned, because there's more great shows coming soon. Thanks for listening.